Welcome to the One Wyoming podcast presented by UniWyo Credit Union. I'm your host, Ryan Thorburn. Make sure you follow me on X at @by_RyanThorburn. The link to all my stories is in that bio, and I have a bunch of Hall of Fame stories. This Friday night, the class of 2026 will be inducted into the Wyoming Athletics Hall of Fame, and we have a very special member of that class with us today on the podcast. Wyoming football royalty, I would say, Josh Wahlwerk, quarterback of the 1996 Pokes. Pokes, that team is going into the Hall of Fame. Josh, first of all, what's it like to be back in Laramie and to go into the Hall of Fame with your boys?
Well, it's funny being back in Laramie because everywhere I'm driving around this morning and last night, I just keep picturing snow everywhere. But to actually go back with the team is pretty special. I mean, we've all been talking on a text chain for the last couple months, and that team was special. Those guys are special. A lot of us still keep in touch. It was a great time, and I'm sure this weekend will be a great time too.
Yeah, the 1996 season was one of the more wild rides in Wyoming football history. 10-2, and we'll get into the highs and lows of that incredible season. But first, take me back to, I guess, growing up in Tracy, California, obviously playing football and then getting into junior college. And how do you end up in Laramie, Wyoming?
Yeah, so in high school, basketball was actually my first love, and I wanted to play both in college. And so I was getting recruited for both, but like smaller schools, but nobody would let me play both. And so I went to junior college in hopes of playing both, and had a really successful freshman year in football, and kind of just to start, you know, decided to just play football. Had a really good year the next year. We were actually ranked third in the country or something in junior colleges. And Coach Corpitz and Coach Tiller were recruiting me pretty heavy, but I was looking at San Jose State, Fresno State, UNLV, Vanderbilt. There was some teams that were recruiting me pretty heavy. But when I came to Laramie on my recruiting trip, they had just come off a Copper Bowl, I think, in 93. And I met a young man named Marcus Harris, and I, you know, saw the kind of offense they were running. And it was similar to what we were doing in junior college, you know, throwing a lot of seam routes, option routes, letting the ball fly around. And it felt just right for me. And I shook Coach Tiller's hand and told him I was coming here. And plus, Mad Dog took me snowmobiling and sold me on it.
So, you know, for the 1996 profile, one of the guys I talked to was Steve Cyphers, obviously one of the greatest offensive linemen in Wyoming history.
Legend.
And he described Joe Tiller and Corpitz and what they had going on offensively as kind of, they were like the Bobby Fischer of football at that time, because, you know, you look at Tiller's history, and even when he goes to Purdue, the Big Ten had no idea how to stop that spread attack. How would you kind of describe what you guys were doing offensively back in 95, 96?
Well, I would describe it as almost unstoppable. When I first transferred here, it was like Chinese to me. You know, the trips left, red, 93, Y mid, Z option. And I was like, what? And, you know, once you figured it out, there was no defense that anybody could throw at us that we didn't have something for them. You know, obviously you got to go execute the play, but we always were in a good situation, and we had the, you know, they just had so many different options in the same play. It was the spread offense, basically, you know, where a lot of the audibles were to protections. And, you know, we had Marcus Harris, who is, you know, my favorite player of all time. But there was just nothing that anybody could throw at us that we didn't have an answer for. And that was all because of that coaching staff and the situations they put us in.
Another interesting nugget that I learned that I didn't know about was, you know, when Cyphers went to the Dallas Cowboys, he said he was just shocked because Aikman didn't audible. It was like, here's the play, run the play. And this is the NFL and one of the great quarterbacks in NFL history. When did you earn that freedom, I guess, to take over the offense and audible at the line of scrimmage?
Well, I think what a good coach does is he teaches his quarterback how to get him out of bad plays. And what a good quarterback does is get his coach out of bad plays. And he taught me, you know, hey, look, I'm going to call a play. And if we come up and, you know, they line up in this, it's not a good play, right? And so it's an easy change. You know, sometimes an audible is just changing the play to the other side. Sometimes the audible is, hey, let's fling it. They're coming. Let's throw it. And which is what I like to do more often than not. But I think right off the bat was teaching audibles. I think the first thing that I learned was, yeah, we learned the plays, we learned the formations, we learned the groupings, but right off the bat was audibles. Get me out of a bad play if I call a bad play. Coach Corbett was a legend at that. And he always had me, you know, you find the safety, find what they're doing, you look them in the eyes, you know, see, you know, okay, you'll be able to tell. And I think even our receiving core was good at knowing, you know, we all kind of were on the same page. The audibles were right off the bat. It wasn't, oh, you got to a certain point where you can audible. I think right when I came in, they started teaching us audibles, and I had been audible in high school as well, and in junior college. So I was used to that, being able to change the play at the line.
So the 1995 season, you guys, like midway or even past midway point, it was a little bit disappointing, and you lost the border war at home. You know, Sonny Lubick was getting the Rams going. But like this year's team has to overcome a bitter disappointment in that game. And you guys did and won the last three games of that season. I know just a lot of guys said that was kind of the start of the 96 season for you guys, winning the last three, getting to 6-5. It was like, okay, we lost some games we shouldn't have, but next year it's going to be a different story.
Yeah. 95 was, I think, a tale of two seasons. I mean, we started off, you know, 2-0, I believe, and injury after injury after injury. And I thought I was bulletproof, and I was running around taking hits and, you know, separated my ribs against Oklahoma State, sprained my ankle against, I can't remember if it was Louisville. Then I go into the BYU game with a, like, flap jacket and ankle taped, and I was just the walking wounded. But I think a lot of us kind of had to just try to get to the game on Saturday, like, okay, hopefully I can play this Saturday. We were banged up pretty bad. Yeah, losing to CSU at home was not fun that year. But we did finish the year well. I think we started to click. You know, that the offense that they ran, right, Coach Corpitz and Coach Tiller, and Coach Cheney was a huge part of that as well, was you needed to get everybody on the same page. And it took a little while to build that chemistry. But once we had it, it was like, you know, okay, we can score anytime we want.
So speaking of offense, 1996 starts, you guys are down by 15 to Idaho, come back and win that one, I think 41-38. Next week, you go on the road in the Big 12 and beat Iowa State in overtime after trailing by 15 points. Like, Brian Lee has a different view of those games than you do. Obviously, they were struggling to stop people. But what was that like, you know, playing in those classic quote-unquote whack shootouts?
You know what's funny is that you're bringing those up, that we were down by 15 and down by 15. I don't ever remember being down. You know, it's like you just kind of... I just wanted, every time we had the ball, like, either Coach Tiller had us where we're either punting inside the 20, we're scoring a touchdown, or we're kicking a field goal. Like, we're going to do our job on offense, and that was what it was all about. And I think, you know, Iowa State had that Troy Davis kid that rushed for 2,000 yards. I don't know if he won the Heisman or was a Heisman candidate.
I think he was top five.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing, right? I mean, they had a good team, and it was humid, and it was weird in Ames, Iowa. And, you know, we were just trying to just keep up, just try to score every time we had the ball. But that was a – Weedle bailed us out in that game, you know.
Yeah, Weedle pushed him out of bounds when it looked like he was going to return the kickoff for the winning touchdown, and then Weedle wins it with another field goal. Yeah. And along those lines, you guys came back and beat Hawaii 66-0, and then you won a really close game with Air Force. That always seems to set the tone for Wyoming. The winner of the Air Force Wyoming game is usually in contention into November. What do you remember about playing Air Force? Because your defense was starting
to I remember we couldn't score.
Yeah.
Against Air Force. It was like we would get down there and kick a field goal, or we'd be down there and something would happen. We'd have to punt. Like, I think it was like 20-17 or something. It was a low scoring game in, you know, in context of how much we were scoring that year. Like they had a good team. They had a good quarterback too with Bo Morgan. I mean, but that was one of those games where nothing could really click right and we just couldn't get in the end zone.
Yeah, Weedle, another game winner and set the school record for field goals in a game. I think he had six.
See, we couldn't get in the end zone.
I just wrote about this and, you know, watched some of the YouTube highlights, so my memory is fresh. But I know after that, you guys started to roll and you get to 9-0. You get to number 16 in the country and you go back to California, your home state, to play San Diego State. Thursday night, ESPN. You mentioned to me when we talked last month that you woke up in your hotel and USA Today's on the, you know, in front of your room in the hallway there, and there's an article about Wyoming. Did it kind of hit you, you know, the situation you were in?
Yeah, when we were, you know, in our hotel and we all kind of came out and there was USA Today's all along the hallway, all in front of our rooms. And there was a picture, I can't remember who the picture was of, but it was like, oh, hey, we've kind of arrived, huh? And then we go out and lose that game.
Well, it's not like you didn't show up. You lost 28-24. Yeah. They had a long, methodical drive and scored in the final seconds. And you guys still get down there, and you had a throw into the end zone to win it that was broken up.
Yeah, that was, you know, I think we went up with a minute and 30-something left, if I can remember. We went up, and they had to score. And we had been holding them pretty much all night on defense. And then I think we went into some kind of prevent defense and they went draw, screen. And next thing you know, they're like in scoring position. And we got the ball with hardly any time left. And it was like, okay, let's just try to get it as close as we can. And we did take a shot at the end. I can't remember like what happened at that, because I think I got hit right when I threw it. But yeah, it was a heartbreaker because we were looking at 10-0, right?
Yeah. On the positive side, though, that sets up high stakes against Colorado State in the Border Bowl, where now if Colorado State wins, they go to the WAC championship. So obviously they're highly motivated all of a sudden. And you guys have to bounce back. So you have to get back to practice and get highly motivated for the Border Bowl. It's that crazy. What if you're 10-0, does it turn out differently, or do you win by 1 point with a drive at the end?
Yeah, you can, you know, you can always go what if about a lot of things, right? But I remember that week thinking, I didn't realize that Colorado State was in a position to go as well, because we had just been winning, right? We were 9-0, and I thought, oh, there's no way anybody's catching us. I remember coming to practice that week with the scouting report, and they go, hey, we got to win this game, like, or they're going to go. And I was like, what are you talking about? and that made it even more important, right? I mean, obviously you always want to beat CSU, but it was high stakes. And then it snowed Thursday and Friday and all the way up to the game on Saturday. And it was like, you know, coming from Hawaii and California, that was not something I was super stoked about.
Yeah. And adding to the drama, Sonny Lubick had it going on. They beat you guys in 94 and 95. They won the WAC those 2 years. And now they're going into this game, and I believe they were 9-0 in November under Lubick at that point. Did any of those things motivate you guys, or was it just about executing and
you that know sort what? Of stuff? I mean, I don't think so. I think that Coach Tiller always, what he did really well was he had us focused mentally. You know, we were in our own little bubble. You know, Laramie is a different kind of place, right? Where the outside world just doesn't matter. You know, and we were just doing our job, and he always had us in a position to every Friday before a game, he'd want to meet with me for an hour or so. And it never lasted an hour. He would go, okay, what's the game plan? I'd go through the whole game plan, and he'd go, all right, I don't care about none of that. He goes, just make sure we're in a position to win the game in the fourth quarter. And I go, okay, well, you could have told me that right when I walked in. But he always had us in a position where nothing mattered but what our job was, right? We weren't worried about Lubick and CSU. We were worried about just doing what we needed to do to win.
So I remember you guys are leading 13-0, I believe, at halftime. And then they score 24 points in a row in the third quarter. You guys fight back. There's a turnover. I think Sexton scores, get it within 24-19. Defense forces another punt where, you know, they're near the 50-yard line and Lubick's like, do I punt? Do I go for it here? Pins you guys back at the 4-yard line. So it looked like a pretty good decision there. 96 yards to go. What's going on in the huddle?
I remember coming out there and my sock had frozen down to my lower because it got pushed down and then it froze there. And I was like trying to pull my sock up and I was laughing and joking around with Marcus. And I remember Rob or somebody, one of the O-linemen started yelling at me like, hey, you got to take this seriously. I'm like, all right. We're going to go 96 yards and score a touchdown. Everybody calm down, you know? And it was, that was a fun drive. I can still remember some of the key plays on that drive. You know, Marcus had, I don't know how many catches that game and never got in the end zone. They were keeping the top on him. And then some of the young kids, there was, I want to say three freshmen, Wendell Montgomery, Kofi Shuck, Marcus Brigham. Some of our young guys had a huge role in that drive because they were bracketing Marcus and Seraph and Peace. And, you know, it was like, okay, they're open. And I was always, you know, like Larry Corbett's always said, football's an easy game. Just take what they give you. And so we were just finding the open guys and just kind of taking it down the field. And I remember thinking, hey, we're getting closer. See, look, I told you guys, don't worry about it. And then we ran right off of Cypher's butt for a touchdown. And and Marcus Brigham, I think that year he maybe had a couple fumbles and he was a little nervous on that last play. And I told him, I said, hey man, just follow 77, run right off his butt and hold on to that dang ball and everything will be fine. And it was a special game. There's nothing like beating CSU in their house. You know, last week was a little rough for these young pokes, but I think there was a few things in that game that could have changed that. That poor quarterback threw three picks, but some of them weren't his fault. I watched that game in Hawaii from home, but yeah, that 96 CSU game was special. Especially for a lot of the guys that had lost to him for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, and after the Brigham touchdown puts you guys ahead 25-24, you don't get the two-point conversion, so there's still life for Colorado State to break your heart. Yeah. If they get in field goal range, they don't because Brian Lee comes up with yet another interception. I believe he had 8 interceptions that season to end it.
That's got to be a record.
It's up there.
Has anybody else ever had 8 interceptions in a season?
I believe it's a Wyoming record.
Yeah.
We will confirm that.
Yeah, that's
a lot.
We'll
see Brian tomorrow and ask him. But
yeah, I'm sure he'll know.
So what is it like to go grab the bronze boot after a game like that?
Well, for myself, I had got my knee rolled up on in the third quarter and came out for a few plays. And for me, it was just like, all right, let's get the heck out of here. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing sweeter than kind of going into somebody else's house, especially your rival like that. I mean, there was no love lost between any of us. It was a dirty game. There was some cheap shots going on. I mean, that was back when you could hit the quarterback late and there wasn't a penalty. You can't even look at the quarterback now without it being a penalty. There was a lot of stuff going on in that game. Some of those guys were taking some cheap shots, and so it was nice and sweet to go into their house and win. I mean, there's nothing better than beating CSU.
One thing that even I forgot about, and Ron Goldberg, I went through all the clips with the Star Tribune. He let me tag along. I wrote a sidebar on Marcus Harris, and he did have 16 catches. Wrote a sidebar on the defense coming up with that last stand, and Ron wrote a game story and a column, but his game story, I totally forgot. It started something along the lines of at 3:27 p.m. Wyoming got the bronze boot back. About an hour later, they found out that UNLV, winless on the season, stuns San Diego State, and Wyoming's going to the WAC championship. I forgot in my mind that you guys needed help, even after beating CSU, because San Diego State had that tiebreaker. Do you remember that?
And how you found out? No, a lot of that stuff I was just oblivious to, right? I mean, we were just, again, in our little Laramie bubble of let's just go win every game and let's try to just do our job. I you know, it's funny because when you bring it up, I remember that, you know, but to me, it was just about let's just go beat the sheep, right? I almost used a cuss word. We drove past, we were driving from Denver last night with my family, and we stopped at McDonald's, and they had a sign. We're right past Fort Collins. They had a sign in the window that said, proudly sponsoring the CSU Rams, and I gave them a little birdie when we walked in.
So obviously we don't have to go through all of the excruciating details, but you guys lost, you know, one of the great college football games of all time in overtime to BYU. Yeah. They were a top five team that year. You guys were a top 20 team. It's strange, but you know, if you didn't have a dog in the hunt, it was a great game, but that had to be, you guys did everything except get the Hollywood ending to your season.
Yeah, man, that one still stings. You know, every year on December 7th, I remember, Pearl Harbor, and I remember losing to BYU. yeah, it was a tough one. I mean, you know, it's to this day, I still think, you know, we should have been 12-0 that year. I mean, there's a couple plays here and there that, you know, we're 12-0. I think we're 7 or 8 points away from being 12-0. We should have won the San Diego State game, and we should have won the BYU game. That game was, you know, it was so much hype around it, and it was like just so much hoopla in Vegas and families and friends and everybody was there. It's like, let's just get into this game and focus on the game. And some good things happened and some bad things happened, but that's life, right? I mean, that's football and can't go backwards.
And I imagine, I mean, just think about this. You passed for 4,090 yards that season, 33 touchdowns, still Wyoming record on the yardage. I imagine every time you see Steve Sarkisian on TV coaching Texas, that bad memory crops up, because you guys were neck and neck for the, you know, touchdowns and leading the nation in passing.
It's funny, man. I don't hate on Sark anymore. I hated him for a long time. But now it's, you know, Saraf and him went to school together. So Saraf knew him really well. And I actually root for the guy. You know, I hope he does well. I like his story, you know. And at the time, yeah, we were trying to beat him and there was no love lost, but there's especially no love loss with BYU. We should have beat him our junior year in Provo. I think a punt return beat us. But yeah, it's, you know, that one still stings more than any loss I've ever had in my life in football. 'Cause we should have won that game.
So you're going to have a bunch of family in town for this event, going into the Hall of Fame. Even your 100-year-old grandmother. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you to be back? And, you know, you've been open about it. After that 96 season when you didn't get into the NFL, right. You had some struggles, yep. Personally,
yep.
And came out on the other side. You seem like you're in a really good place, and now you get to hang out with Marcus Harris and all these guys. Yeah. It's got to be quite a moment for you.
Yeah, you know, it's I've been back probably 3 or 4 times since then. But now with my whole family being here, it is pretty special. This place is special. Laramie was a huge part of becoming an adult, becoming a man, you know, learning about life, learning about ups and downs, right? And to come back here with my 100-year-old grandma who just turned 100 in July, and she used to come to every game. My mom and them are here. My wife and my kids have never been here. And so it's absolutely special. My little brother's right here with me. He coaches high school, out in Tracy, California. And it's really cool to be able to come back and enjoy something like this in a town that gave you so much, right? 'Cause I mean, Laramie it's just a special place, right? I mean, it's out in the middle of freaking nowhere and it could be freezing as heck, but it's, definitely a special place in my heart and in every Cowboy fan's heart.
Well, Josh, thanks so much for spending some time on the One Wyoming podcast with us. It's great to see you and all your guys in here. And, you know, Saturday is going to be fun, too. Richard Peace is doing a flyover. You know, there's going to be a story on Richard on GoWyo.com. So that makes it even extra special, just knowing that you know, he got motivated to get into the military on 9/11. And now 25 years later, he's doing the flyover with his guys going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Peace is awesome. I mean, there's some awesome people on that team. There's some guys we've lost. Kirby Droob, who passed away. Pat Larson, who passed away. There's, you know, I would be remiss, and I would probably get beat up tonight or tomorrow night if I don't say that I love you, O-line. Love you guys.
What an O-line that was. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Just a note, this Wyoming-Northern Colorado game, 2 p.m. Saturday, War Memorial Stadium. You know, we're trending towards a sellout. So if you're going to be watching it on Mountain West Plus, make sure you're signed up for Mountain West Plus and have everything ready to roll by 2 p.m. on Saturday. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Subscribe, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll talk to you soon.